I was born in Chicago, and my family moved before I was in elementary school to a town called Northlake in the western suburbs. A polluted creek ran along the grounds of Automatic Electric, a huge factory, and I took lots of walks there, feeling like I was immersed in nature. Generic trees lined the creek, and dandelions and a few nameless flowers poked through the lawn. Little rodents we called gophers peeked out of holes. I had no idea that they were 13-lined ground squirrels, nor that the squirrels in my own backyard were of two different species, gray and fox. I'd heard of chipmunks thanks to Disney's Chip and Dale, but had never seen a real one. I knew three birds: the little sparrows that begged for French fries at McDonald's, the robins running on our lawn or picked up dead for a day or two after the DDT truck went by, and cardinals that sang in our maple tree. I didn't know if any bird running on a lawn could be correctly called a robin, or if any bird that was red was a cardinal, and I didn't know how to recognize a maple tree except the one out my window. For all I knew, maple was that tree's name in the way that Laura was mine. As a college freshman at the University of Illinois, I was active in organizing our first Earth Day celebration in 1970, but my understanding of the outdoors was little more informed than the understanding of a baby whose unfocused eyes gaze in wonder at kaleidoscope shapes and colors in a shopping mall. In 1973, before I took any college zoology classes or became a birder, Russ and I visited his parents in rural Port Wing, where they were fixing up a house for retirement. This was a far more natural place than any I'd ever been to, but all I saw there were more generic trees and flowers and a lot of mushrooms. I noticed an occasional robin, but no other birds. I'm not quite sure how I got through reading Walden in high school, much less getting A's in English. What meaning did I extract from sentences like, quote, "The single spruce stands hung with usnea lichens, and small hawks circulate above, and the chickadee lisps amid the evergreens, and the partridge and rabbit skulk beneath"? Hawks were zoo birds, not anything I could see in the real world. Bald eagles and red tails and broad-winged hawks almost certainly flew right over my head on that first trip to Port Wing, but I was blind to them. The various animal and plant names Thoreau mentioned were, as far as I could tell, thesaurus words, fancy terms you stuck in your writing to sound smart and impress teachers. I could certainly buy Thoreau's line, "I rejoice that there are owls." I loved the one in Disney's animated Sleeping Beauty. But I was mystified with Thoreau's sentences after that. "Let them do the idiotic and maniacal hooting for men. It is a sound admirably suited to swamps and twilight woods, which no day illustrates, suggesting a vast and undeveloped nature which men have not recognized. They represent the stark twilight and unsatisfied thoughts which all have." Now I realize that Thoreau was talking about the barred owl, something clear to anyone who has heard a pair's bizarre courtship calls. Thoreau's fancies were not fed by amorphously generic nature. His imagination was sparked by the real, the particular, even if I didn't understand that. I needed one small thing to shift my understanding and bring my nebulous concept of nature into focus. The field guide I received for Christmas in 1974 became my personal catalog to the particular. Tomorrow I'll explain how. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.